Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination number 245. This is 245, the hazy edition here. Personally, a little bit mentally, and everything else has kind of just been a little bit fading in, fading out the past couple days. So I figured just title this the hazy edition because it sort of kind of fit here. Hopefully, you're having a great week. We here are having a fantastic week, except for a couple small issues which may or may not have crossed your own little personal radar. As we were posting the very last show, Caffeination 244, at somewhere around like 1:30 in the morning, found out that one of my, probably one of the only celebrities that I have ever actually truly followed and listened to, George Carlin, passed away. And I gotta tell you, it touched me in a way I didn't think that it would. Probably because there's just a whole ton of reasons. He was my absolute favorite comedian ever, and it's just I put a lot of stock in comedy, more so than a lot of other forms of entertainment, because I think that it personally speaks to a different level of the human psyche. I think that comedy is truer to what people actually believe than a lot of other things. So it really kind of hit me hard. It's weird because this is the first celebrity that's actually happened about. So I wrote a little bit about that, and you can actually head on over to the Traveler's Mug if you're interested in reading that. If not, we're not going to trouble your mind with it any more here. Just wanted to kind of put it out there, and it's my personal blog's over there. Also, you're going to find a couple different video tidbits over at my Tumblr blog. But on today's show, you're going to be able to hear about any and all of the following topics. You're going to hear about toasters, Bill Gates, ray guns, paperclips, nostalgia, and absinthe. Yeah, the whole strange range of different things. So up first, before we get into the TechCraft, I did want to mention two different things. I've been talking a lot about different security tools and different ways in which you can actually further your knowledge when it comes to actual security and website security and stuff like that. I actually wrote an article last night and finished it because I didn't want to post it last night because I was up at around like 1 a.m. and I was like, you know what, every time I post an article at 1 a.m. it ends up being absolutely horrible. So what I do is I post it at lunch the next day, so that way at least I can give it a read over and change any of the really strange phrasings and words into actual legible English. So there's a security tools rundown currently popped up over at caffeination.com. It lists probably the four basic websites that you need to understand, you need to take into account when you're talking about computer security. So if you'd like to educate yourself a little bit more, or if you just like something fun to play around with on the back channel in your own life, then you too can head on over there and check that out. It's called the Security Tools Rundown. It's probably the second thing down there. It's also linked up in the show notes, which, by the way, if you'd actually like to grab the show notes from today's show or anything else, or you'd like to have them sent direct to your email, then you too can just email caffeination@gmail.com, and I will add you to the list of people who get the show notes. The only thing that happens there is I end up putting everybody in a big BCC field. There's no extra software, there's no spam. The only other thing that you may get every once in a blue moon is a notice if the show's going to be delayed for some strange reason. That's about it. So that's just our little mailing list that we have going there. The Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network, and if you'd like to find out more about that, you can head on over to techpodcasts.com. And if you'd like to find out more about this show, or you'd like to find out more of the other different little episodes that we got going on, you can head on over to www.caffeination.com, and it's coincidentally enough, caffeination.com. Kind of got messed up here a little bit. I don't know why it's taking me so long to get into today's show, but hey, you know, the this is the hazy edition, so it kind of fits with the way that this is actually starting off. All right, now the other thing I wanted to mention before we dove on into the TechCraft, and we are going to be going fast and furious once this gets started, so you might want to strap in just a little bit, as I'd like to put a very happy anniversary out to my parents, who are currently, by the time that this gets posted, in the 26th, they're going to be celebrating their 32nd year being married together. So it's a really special time. Hopefully they're enjoying themselves. I know they actually took a short little trip, so hopefully everything, many many happy returns to them on that. It's kind of neat to have both my parents and my wife's parents still together and still kind of as examples for how married couples should work things out, you know. So it's just kind of fun, and I wanted to say a very happy anniversary to my parents. All right, moving right along. We have a Tech Cruft section that is absolutely stuffed to the gills with all of the fat of the land when you're looking around the internet. These are all the cool things that you're going to be able to find. Up first, we have a little note from Bill Gates, and you might wonder why Bill Gates is making it onto the Caffeination. After all, he's supposedly retired, right? Well, apparently back in 2003, he decided to send a short little email complaining about some of the usability features in Windows. And this is an internal email. I don't remember who it's actually to, and apparently you can actually head on over there and check the entire thing out, which I'm going to be doing when I actually get a little bit more time. But he basically runs down a list of complaints that mirror pretty much everything that you would have ever said about Microsoft yourself. And it's really damning that it's actually coming from the man who wrote the first version of Windows. I mean, this is the guy who is the end-all and be-all when it comes to what Windows is. So it's kind of crazy to see this. And he picked some of the things out that it's just kind of funny. It says, so why did I reboot? Because it insisted on it. Of course, that meant getting rid of everything in my Outlook state. Now, this is one of the biggest problems that I personally have with Windows Update, is that it irritates you. Even after you say, I will reboot later, it irritates you and bugs you and pings you every freaking 10 minutes. Are you sure you don't want to reboot? You do know that none of your updates actually went into effect because you haven't rebooted. Yes, I understand that. The tiny little yellow shield in the corner tells me that I need to pay more attention to you, and I understand that. However, I'm in the middle of an incredibly important email or whatever else that you may be in the middle of, and it's just one of those things where you just can't do it at that point in time. They need to understand this. Yes, I understand you are still currently in a vulnerable state, but it sometimes takes quite a while to reboot in one of these machines, especially a machine with like all kinds of attached machinery and stuff like that, like SCSI drives, tape arrays, and all that other stuff. It takes somewhere around an hour for my server to restart, and I get bothered every 10 minutes because it needs to do it. So he goes on through an entire huge amount of stuff. So he says he goes back, he's running Windows Update. All he wanted to do was get Movie Maker, and he ended up having to go through and pick out like 15 different updates, do the reboot test, update exclusive test package, and it just goes on and on and on. And you're looking at it going, I don't understand why this email was actually leaked, and I'm pretty sure any email that Bill ever sent to anybody that was scathing in this manner is probably now locked down, shredded, and all other kinds of stuff. But it's really telling that there's something wrong inside Microsoft if you can't even give a good user experience to the man who owns the company. You know, one of the richest men in the world who owns the company that, you know, you're complaining about. It's just astounding to me that he would have the same experience. But at the same point in time, it's also very humanizing. He doesn't get humanized very often, so it's kind of interesting to see him in that light as just yet another frustrated user. So, you know, Windows, you have the world at your beck and call at this point in time. Everybody has your machine almost. There's a lot of Mac people out there right now, and there's a lot of people who are just dissatisfied with the user experience. And I'm pretty sure if you handed Bill Gates a Mac and he experienced some of the user experience that they have, he might enjoy it. In fact, he probably has one or two. That'd be kind of fun. But it's just, I don't know. I don't know what else to say on that one, so we're going to move right along. How would you like to kill your TV? Yes, you too can own your very own Ronnie Ray gun. Well, it's not actually titled that. I just wanted to slip it in. But this is a Ray gun remote. I like the idea of this. This seems really kind of fun and cool. And it at some point in time, it's like, you know what? I could probably hand this to my son. It'd be fun to sit here and watch him, you know, turn the TV on and off. The only problem with that is once you show him how to do something, he would do it over and over and over again. I like this idea. It's only $18 for this remote. It really looks like something straight out of the Looney Tunes. It looks like something that Marvin the Martian would end up using to kill those giant water, the instant dehydrated Martians. But you're looking at it and says, okay, I understand this. But remotes have a very certain form factor that is very planned, and there's not very much give to it, so you need to be able to somehow incorporate all of that functionality into whatever kitschy remote that you're going to put out there, and I just don't see it with this. I mean, yeah, the power button might just be the trigger, but you need to have more functionality like that. You know what would make a really good TV remote? A tricorder from Star Trek. It's already in the format. It's already has all kinds of different buttons and screens and stuff you could put on there, and I'm pretty sure with the touch panel technology that they have out there right now, it would be exceedingly simple because, you know, they have iPhones, they have the phone that I have, the Verizon Voyager. There's just all these different little touchscreen interfaces. And to make something that's exactly identical to a tricorder and have it be a TV remote, have it be a phone, something, anything, it'd just be kind of cool. And I see this as an example of something that yet has not come to fruition. So it's just, it's almost, but not quite there. You know what I mean? So, all right, moving right along. I don't know if you remember this, but a while back, there was a gentleman who decided to trade one red paperclip, and he wanted to eventually get a house. So he traded one red paperclip to a fish pen, to a doorknob, to a Coleman stove, and it went on and on and on, and he got more and more publicity. And eventually, he made 14 trades, and by July 12th of 2006, he ended up with a house. So it really worked. He got all the way out to the house, and the house ended up being in Canada, and I don't know if he ever actually ended up living there, which is kind of an interesting idea to think about, but when you're looking at it, he's like, okay, fine. He was an internet phenomenon at that point in time. He was kind of like the seminal example of how viral marketing could kind of increase the user experience that people were going for, you know? So he started out with a mission. He finished the mission. We should have never heard from this guy again. Now, for some reason, he's, you know, oneredpaperclip.blogspot.com's firing back up, and he's trying to trade the house for something. I don't know why, and apparently he's sticking with the July 11th, July 12th date. So July 11th is going to 2008 is going to be exactly 2 years after he got the house, and there's a whole bunch of stuff. So if you're interested in trading for a house in the middle of Kipling, Saskatchewan, Canada, then you too can head on over there. It's at 503 Main Street in Kipling. So it's kind of an interesting little thing. I don't know what exactly he's trying to pull here, but I just wanted to give him back, you know, his 16th minute of fame, and then let's just get him out of here. So that somebody sent me the link to that already, and I already saw it, and I was like, you know what, I should probably just mention it and move on. There's not much else we could say there. So all right, that's done now. All right, now the next little thing we have up here, this is perfect. I don't know what else to say about this. There's something really cool about the idea that, you know, Netflix is able to be streamed to a set-top box. You know, they have the Roku player or everything right now. And the only thing is, it's $99, and you don't know if there's going to be any other function beyond that. You know what I mean? I have an Xbox 360, which I really love. I like the idea, you know, that I can watch videos and movies and everything on there. The only problem with it is I don't like paying for it. I already pay for a Netflix subscription, so I needed to find a way to marry these two very divergent areas of tech. Well, apparently, over at Hackaday.com, they have a guide for how you can stream Netflix to an Xbox 360 if you have a machine with Vista on it. I love this idea. I have not yet found a way to do it because I don't have a machine at home that has Vista. I will in about 2 weeks, but I don't have one yet. So I'm looking at this. I'm saying, you know what? This is going to be the answer to my problems. So I'll let you know if it actually works out. And if anybody else out there has both an Xbox 360 and a box that has Windows Vista that's usually running in your house, then hey, you too can head on over there and try this. I have been able to stream movies from my XP machine through a different program to my Xbox 360 so I can watch different things. Like I can have DVDs that I've pulled off the DVDs and had them stored in an external drive. I mean, I had up until I bought the copy of Red vs. Blue the last 5 years, I had all of the different low-tech versions on my hard drive because they were all for free online. You could just download them in whatever format you wanted. And I wanted to watch them one day, and I had to, you know, it took me about an hour and a half at all the setup, but it eventually worked. And I love that idea that I can have just content somewhere else in the house. I can have a media server somewhere else in the house and be able to enjoy it in different areas of the house. So it seems really cool. Now, if I could just get the Nintendo Wii upstairs to do the same thing somehow, I would be absolutely set. So I don't know if anybody else out there has a way you can do that. All right, up next, a story from over at device.com. Talk a little bit about roughing it and the different challenges facing adventure people today. And I don't know exactly what to call these people, because there's a certain subset of people who like to take luxury with them as they quote unquote rough it. So there's experiences built specifically for these people, called, I don't know what exactly it's called. It's basically, imagine a teepee, and then imagine solar panels on the outside and Wi-Fi access. While, yes, it would be very cool, I'm very old school when it comes to going camping. I like going camping. I like unplugging except for having my cell phone in case of emergencies. If I go camping, you're not going to hear from me all weekend. I like cooking on an open fire. I like the whole nine yards. I'm an Eagle Scout. I'm not used to having connectivity. We didn't have lights in 95% of the places I ever stayed. So this seems very counterintuitive to me. It seems very inauthentic. And I'm not even saying that your experience needs to be authentic, but I'm saying that nobody needs that level of connectivity. If you need to stay that connected, you probably don't need to be camping in the first place. You could probably just pull a 9-year-old special. You go in the backyard and set up a little tent there, because you're probably in range of the Wi-Fi, and your battery, if you really need to, you can go back inside and charge it. So I didn't delve too deeply into this, but there's a solar-powered DVD player and a spa. There's a whole nine yards here. So this is speaking to a very specific subset of people who enjoy camping, but not really. So I wanted to put that out there. The KOA campgrounds, I gotta say, are probably the perfect marriage for somebody like myself. I enjoy camping. My wife, it's kind of iffy back and forth. She needs a full-service bathroom when we go camping. So the KOA campgrounds kind of serve that need. They have very nicely appointed bathrooms everywhere we've ever been. So she can take a shower, she can go to use the restroom and everything, and it's always very clean, very tidy, and she's fine. I still get to sleep outside, there's still trees, and it's still a very campground-ish atmosphere, but we somehow found a middle ground. So that's the kind of thing that I'm used to. There's no Wi-Fi access, they have a mess hall, but that's about it. You know what I mean? All right, up next, we've kind of broken our ban on doing Gizmodo stories, and I think this is going to be for a little while, because they seem to kind of be behaving. If you don't remember, a while back, Gizmodo was pulling some pranks at CES, I think not this year, but the year before. They were actually turning off TVs during people's presentations, and I thought this was so unruly and a bad example for bloggers everywhere, especially people like myself who would like to be considered journalists in some right, who would like to be considered people who impart news to others and aren't going to go out and act like complete tools. I mean, there's a certain, again, subset of people and bloggers who are out there who just have a tendency to goof off, and they don't contribute anything positive. And I didn't think that Gizmodo and Gawker Media was that subset of people. When they kind of proved themselves to be, I didn't really need to have anything else to do with them. So if I found a story that was it there, I would look elsewhere to see if I could find a duplicate. This is the first time that I've said, you know what, I really think that we need to take this story into account, basically because of what it is. I love Legos, and I know there's a lot of other people out there who are really, really, really into Legos as well. Did you know that the company who creates Legos, Lego, actually has a secret vault that is in the headquarters that actually has every single set that was ever created? One copy of every single set. Now, you need to head on over to Gizmodo and read it. There are apparently 4,720 sets inside this lair. There's an entire huge video about this that you need to watch. And the guy who's... And it's actually built into the house of the owner of Lego. So the old family house, which I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce the man's first name, but it's Christensen. So it's really cool. It's interesting to see all the different stuff. And the author was actually going through and saying, you know what, this he didn't really understand it. Up until he actually came upon a set that he had as a kid, and it just struck him. It was a very visceral reaction, and he was immediately transported back to that Christmas and all the different pictures, the photos, the different things that he built. I know there's a lot of people who listen to the podcast who really love Legos, and I just thought I'd pass that experience on. Maybe you might see a set in a video or something else that you had when you were a kid. So it's just kind of cool to think that they actually still have all that stuff around. I'm kind of enthused about it. Not necessarily some of the newer stuff, but a lot of the really old stuff to see that the Legos were originally all white and red. So it's kind of cool, so I just wanted to pass it along to everybody out there and congratulate Giz on a really good story that they put out there. Next little thing that we have up here is actually reverse graffiti. There's a story from over at mopos.ca. A certain artist out there actually took a relatively blank wall that was just pretty much covered with soot and filth and everything and decided to clean it up a little bit and make an artistic impression on it at the same point in time. So what he did was he apparently used stencils and different kinds of cleaning equipment and cleaned the filth off in a very specific pattern to create what could only be described as a 20th century etching. He etched into the filth and the grime of your standard downtown city a gorgeous landscape, resplendent with trees and hills, and appears to be a whole bunch of other different stuff. And it's just really, really cool. He made a 140-foot mural on the wall of the Broadway Tunnel in San Francisco. So if there's anybody out there who listens to the Caffeination Podcast in San Francisco, I know we got a couple listeners in California in general, I just don't know specifically if they're in San Francisco, and you see pictures of this, or if you see this or you happen to wander by, please take a photo and send it in. It just looks really, really awesome. I enjoyed heartily my trip to San Francisco when I went with the wife back in 2006. So it's just kind of fun to see, and I don't know what else to make of this, but no, just wanted to pass it along because I thought it was awesome. All right, up next we have a story from over at Engadget, WeHD's homebrew guide. Hacking doesn't get much easier than this. Now, for those of you who may not know, homebrew is the ability to run code, software, whatever else you would like to on whatever machine you would like to. So it kind of started out a little bit with the PlayStation portables and originally with the original Xbox. Basically, you have to break the copy protection on a lot of these machines to actually get that level of functionality back out of them. And the Wii has kind of sparked a lot of creativity in this. If you had Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess, there was a way to sort of use some glitch in the game to allow you to install non-authenticated software onto your Wii. And once you did it one way, you were allowed to kind of go through. And I've always kind of held off hacking any console that I own, specifically with the Xbox, because I like to play online, and I hate the people who are online who have the hacks that hacked Xboxes, because it gives them an advantage in certain areas, or there's the ability to gain that advantage. So rather than risk having my account banned, or rather than risk having my Xbox banned off of Xbox Live, I just decided to forego that. I do still have an original Xbox that I might end up trying to play around with, because I don't actually use it to go online. But I don't have any games where I would be playing against other people on the Wii right now, so it'd be kind of cool to give this a shot. I think I finally found a guide easy enough. I mean, I am a technologically sound person. I am very fluent in the ways of Unix and all other kinds of stuff, but when it comes to console hacking, I get a little bit skittish because I honestly don't have enough money to replace the console should I decide to bork it completely. So, this is apparently a prepackaged zip file with some ready-to-go quote-unquote brew files, and there's a video telling you how to do it from start to finish. I make no promises that this is as advertised. I just wanted to put it out there in case anybody else out there was kind of on the same fence that I was and was interested in doing it. So, I just wanted to put it out there. Alright, moving right along again from over at Engadget. I gotta tell you, if there is one retro video game that I absolutely love, and I don't think I could have ever been happier when I saw that it was coming to Xbox Live Arcade, it's Dig Dug. And there's a very specific story that goes along with it. I'm going to try and tell it as quickly as possible. When I used to go to the dentist, I used to hate it when I was a very young kid. I hate it up until this day. I actually stopped going for a little while, ended up paying for it in the end. But there was a dentist that my parents took us to for a couple years where they had an arcade in the waiting room. And that's enough to make any kid want to go to the dentist. And it was really cool because there was no coins that you needed. You just basically had to push the button, you could start, and you could play to your heart's content. And having the ability to, I would try and get my parents to go there early so we could sit there in the waiting room that much longer, because you could sit there and you could play Dig Dug. And Dig Dug was the one game that they had there that I remembered, and I've always loved it, and I've always wanted to play it again. It's just, there's something really fun about the entire world that the Dig Dug is kind of created in, and it's the menacing pukas which is one of the enemies. And somebody's actually decided to make a pillow out of the Dig Dug character. So you have Dig Dug on the one side and a Pooka on the other. So it's kind of cool. And these are homegrown, created by a woman named Manic Maiden for her brother's birthday. So I just thought it was awesome, thought I'd pass it along. And now that I'm looking at these, I'm like, you know what? I think my son would really like these. I'm probably gonna get vetoed in putting these in his room because they don't have the same meaning to him as they do to me. But you know, I could probably make a little pixelized version of these things. Maybe hang them up in the caffeination lair somewhere. I don't know. I need some really kind of geeky art down here. There's some fun stuff, but nothing like this. Maybe I need to have kind of like a wall of fame, all the video games or the different techie things that really kind of strike a chord with me. But Dig Dug is one of those things. I love playing it on Xbox Live. I love the pillows that they had here, so I just had to pass them along. All right, up next we have what could probably be considered probably one of the lowest tech stories that we've ever had here in the Caffeination, in the TechCraft section. This is just simply called The Plug. Now, this is a bit of a performance art piece, and I usually don't put these out there, but I just kind of thought this was cool. This is kind of like browsing a Flickr stream that you don't own, that you don't even know the person. There's no associated content with it. There was a person who basically, named Jay, who basically went to a park bench, tied a disposable camera to it, and left a note. Said, "Good afternoon, I have attached this camera to the bench so that you can take pictures. Seriously. So have fun. I'll be back later this evening to pick it up." And when he came back later in the evening, you know what he found? The entire roll of film had been shot. And it wasn't just shot by one person. There was no apparently offending shots anywhere in there. There's just a bunch of really cool and different little vignettes into the different people who happened by. So I really thought this was kind of an interesting and kind of cool just exercise. And I don't know if you'd ever be able to replicate something like this just because... I mean, you could, but there's always something really interesting about being an original, and I love this idea, and I just wanted to pass it along just simply as another user experience, so that you could kind of see it, and you could kind of enjoy it the same way I did. All right, moving right along yet again. Like I told you, we have a lot of content, and we have not very much time to talk about it, so it's just time to plow on through. How would you like a solar-powered glowing flower pot? Well, it apparently does exactly what it's advertised, but not in the way that you would think. The solar-powered pot will create light during the nighttime, but it needs a place to collect the light. So apparently there is a 9.8-foot wire, so roughly a 10-foot wire, which collects to a spike that you put into the ground, which has a solar panel on it. So you could have this outside your window or whatever else. I'm pretty sure you could probably remove the spike. There's no picture of the spike, which is irritating me. And you could just have the pot in your living room or something and provide like a cool nightlight. That's what I would do. Because the back of our house gets a lot of really nice sun, and we don't have a very wide windowsill. So what I would do is I would probably either find a way to kind of rework it so that it would actually light up the area over the plants. Because I think having a lit flower pot is cool, but it's not very useful. You know what I mean? I think it would be kind of cool if there was kind of a hood-like section over where the plant was and it actually provided light to the plant, because one of the common misidentified characteristics of plants is that they turn carbon monoxide into oxygen. While yes, this is true through the process of photosynthesis during the day, however, there is an opposite reaction at night, and they actually produce carbon dioxide because there is no photosynthesis taking place. It's not nearly as much as you or I would do when we're breathing, and it's not nearly as much oxygen. You know, it's not a complete reversal, but they don't provide the exact same amount. So I think it'd be really cool to actually kind of find a way to tweak this system into creating oxygen the entire day. And I don't know what it would do to a plant to be on all the time, so to speak, but I just think it would be kind of an interesting project to attempt. I'm waiting for Hackaday to play around with it. All right, up next, just kind of a short little clip that I saw here, and specifically, literally a clip. I'm somebody who uses carabiners all the time. There's little mountain climbing hooks. I have one sitting on my desk in work that has all of my keys in work. I have a flagpole clasp for my keys at home just because I hate having keys in my pocket. I don't like the feel of it. I don't like the way that they actually... and jingle around. I just like having them off-site, you know, so to speak. And I'm also somebody who likes to carry his data with him. So why not combine those two things? And apparently for $32, you two can pick up a 4-gig carabiner. The one that they're showing there is blue, and I just thought this was a really cool meeting of the minds. The only thing that I don't like is that there's a cap on the USB thing. This should be a slide-out USB. There should be a tiny little cover over it, and you should slide it up or slide it back in. It needs to be a little bit more ruggedized rather than just have the kind of form factor of the carabiner and the form factor of the USB drive kind of melded together. It's a great idea. I think it's really useful, and I would definitely use this in work because I have my keys with me absolutely everywhere, and I always, probably 90% of the time, I usually have a thumb drive in my pocket as well, just because there's a lot of portable applications, I have a lot of security applications and everything else on there that I keep at all times. So, if I could kind of limit that and kind of condense that down into one little gadget, then it would be kind of fun and kind of cool to carry around. But this, I would lose the cap. There doesn't look to be a good cap retention device here. And you need that because if this thing's going to be clipped to your bag or whatever, it's going to be flopping all around. It's just not going to work. You know, that's a big hole in the idea behind this. All right, moving right along. There's a story over at Device that I'm just going to make one little quick comment on there. They have a video of the Unbreakable Umbrella. This is the stealth weapon that also keeps you dry. They actually show a video of a gentleman standing on the umbrella when it's suspended between two chairs. Here's the problem. I've never had somebody complain to me about an umbrella that broke in half. I've always had people complain to me that the umbrella has kind of gone convex at the wrong point in time, and once that happens, the thing is ruined. So if you showed me that this guy was able to hang in between two chairs by the umbrella, you know, and bounce up and down on it and not have it go, you know, inverted on him, then I would be tempted to actually try there, especially considering that it's $180. And yes, it's a steel pipe as an umbrella, and I understand that, but you know what? A real umbrella is a good enough weapon for me. If you are in a situation where you really need to throw down and all you got's an umbrella, I'm pretty sure you're in a good situation at that point, unless you got one of the little stubby 6-inch varieties. You know, if you have a full-size umbrella, you're pretty much set to jet unless the guy has a gun. So, I don't understand the idea behind this. It's kitschy, it's cool, it's everything that's, you know, all well and good in the world. All right, moving right along. Last little thing that we have here in the TechCruft section is actually barbed wire, the beta version. This is from over at Wired.com. Apparently on June 25th, 1867, the first patent for barbed wire was actually pushed forward. It was actually called a thorn hedge, and it actually has a little bit of confluence here because the first version of barbed wire to actually gain widespread acceptance was actually used was actually created through a coffee bean grinder, which I kind of think is funny, especially considering where I'm ending up putting this here. Now, it's kind of weird to think about different objects. I mean, they might not necessarily be household objects, because I'm pretty sure not everybody has a little bit of razor wire hanging around their house, or you might, and I'm not one to judge. But it's kind of interesting to look back and see the advent of different things, specifically things like barbed wire, because they're kind of so ubiquitous now. Everybody can just look at a picture of it. I mean, you've seen them in like old-time photos from like World War One and stuff like that. To think that, you know, it was actually created in 1867, that somebody said, you know what, we need to find a way to do cattle fencing, but we don't have the money to actually put up like a full fence, and there's no way to actually create like a hedgerow, and we need something that's going to stop the cattle from actually, you know, going through the fence. And it's kind of fun to read the little history of it. And at the same point in time, apparently there were people who campaigned against the use of barbed wire. They called it the devil's rope, and it was cruel to livestock. There was anti-barbed wire associations, and there was actually a ban on barbed wire, and it was actually people were held liable. But in the early 1880s, the U.S. manufacturers were turning out millions of barrels of this stuff a year. So I just kind of think that it's fun, and it kind of speaks to somewhere around what technology is going to be. Every time you see a large scale kind of push against something, it's pretty much assured that eventually, you know, when something actually goes through the paces, and if it passes that trial by fire, that it's going to be kind of laughable down the line. So I just kind of thought it was cool and wanted to pass it along. Little story about some fun tech in the back end. Alright, we're moving right along to the caffeine and food section, and we're going to head you on your way today. There's a bunch of little fun quick things here. First up, vote for energy drinks. If you are somebody who really enjoys energy drinks and you'd like to make your voice heard, be it for Red Bull, Monster, Amp, NOS, Rockstar, Starbucks, Double Shot, Spike, Red Headline, Full Throttle, etc., etc., then you can head on over to EnergyFiend.com because they have well over 130 energy drinks all in their Battle Royale, because apparently Red Bull's kind of been pushing out there saying, we are the world's number one energy drink, and if it was up there, I would probably pick Jolt, even though I haven't had one in a while. I'm pretty much a coffee and tea kind of guy, so if that is the way you sway, then head on over there and vote. All right, up next, we actually have a cookie controller, NES cookie controller. It's a, I don't know exactly what it's made of, other than apparently two Skittles or M&Ms and a little bit of licorice and some icing. There's no other words exactly on what this is made of. I do, however, think that it is an excellent representation of the original 8-bit controller for the Famicom/NES controller. All right, moving right along, we also have Absinthe Lollipops. Yes, the Green Fairy has made its way into lollipops, which are actually available for sale in the United States. You can't buy the normal absinthe in the United States because there's some strange law in effect, and apparently it makes people go crazy, according to this. But I know plenty of people who've tried it on their travels abroad, and I know plenty of people who are abroad who are probably going to laugh at the U.S. laws about it, but there's apparently absinthe-flavored lollipops and actually actual bits of absinthe that are in the lollipops themselves, so you too will be able to soon get absinthe lollipops, no matter where you live, pretty much. Up next, there's apparently a design on the floor plans that has actually gotten Guinness Book of Records approval. CO2 gas-powered toaster. It is the highest popping toast in the world. Somewhere over 30 feet, I think it is. It is insane. I don't know who would need toast to pop that high, and I also wouldn't want to be on the receiving end of that loaf of doom. And then the last little thing that we have here in the caffeine and food section, kind of last little bit of hype before we end up rolling along here, is two laptop cakes. Now, I think this is a really cool idea. Apparently, these two people met on an internet dating site, and they decided that their wedding cake, or their engagement cake, I can't tell which, was actually going to be their online profile pictures and two little laptops that were connected together with a cord that was kind of strung around in a little piece of a heart there, and two apparently little shots of espresso. You know, all the best for that. But I just kind of thought it was cool, and there's a little bit of a crossover cable. But it's kitschy, it's cool, it's fun. I'm using the word kitsch a lot today, but I like it. I like the idea of actually pulling some element of the couple into the actual cake design. It's one of the reasons I watch the Ace of Cakes and a whole bunch of the other little shows on the Food Network. I'm a junkie for that stuff. But I wanted to kind of pass it along here, and hopefully you enjoy that. The last little thing that we're going to do here is kind of a little bit of a homage to George Carlin. It's the very tail end of one of his bits. I think it was Live in New York, slightly edited. There's only one piece of content I took out because it may or may not be offensive to some people. So, hey, it's George Carlin. You know, what do you want? And he's, like I said, he's my absolute favorite comic ever. So just going to play you on out here. I'd like to thank everybody for listening to the Caffeination Podcast. This has been episode number 245. This is made possible by listeners like you. We're kind of like PBS. If you weren't here to listen, I wouldn't be talking to anybody. You know what I mean? So thank you so much for the time that you spend here on the site and everything. And hey, please feel free to send in your comments, feedback, suggestion over at caffeination@gmail.com. All this and all of the other episodes are lovingly nestled at www.caffination.com. And again, here is George Carlin.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, that we've enjoyed some good times this evening and enjoyed some laughter together, I feel it is my obligation to remind you of some of the negative, depressing, dangerous, life-threatening things that life is really all about. Things you have not been thinking about tonight, but which will be waiting for you as soon as you leave the theater or as soon as you turn off your television sets. Quicksand, body lice, evil spirits, gridlock, acid rain, continental drift, labor violence, flash floods, rabies, torture, bad luck, calcium deficiency, falling rocks, cattle stampedes, bank failure, evil neighbors, killer bees, organ rejection, lynching, toxic waste, unstable dynamite, religious fanatics, prickly heat, price fixing, moral decay, hotel fires, loss of face, stink bombs, bubonic plague, neo-Nazis, friction, cereal weevils, failure of will, chain reactions, soil erosion, mail fraud, dry rot, voodoo curses, broken glass, snake bite, parasites, white slavery, public ridicule, faithless friends, random violence, breach of contract, family scandal, charlatans, transverse myelitis, structural defects, race riots, sunspots, rogue elephants, Wax buildup, killer frost, jealous co-workers, root canals, metal fatigue, corporal punishment, sneak attacks, peer pressure, vigilantes, birth defects, false advertising, ungrateful children, financial ruin, mildew, loss of privileges, bad drugs, ill-fitting shoes, widespread chaos, Lou Gehrig's disease, stray bullets, runaway trains, chemical spills, locusts, airline food, shipwrecks, prowlers, bathtub accidents, faulty merchandise, terrorism, discrimination, wrongful cremation, carbon deposits, beef tapeworm, taxation without representation, escaped maniacs, sunburn, abandonment, threatening letters, entropy, nine-mile fever, poor workmanship, absentee landlords, solitary confinement, depletion of the ozone layer, unworthiness, intestinal bleeding, defrocked priests, loss of equilibrium, disgruntled employees, global warming, card sharps, poison meat, nuclear accidents, broken promises, contamination of the water supply, obscene phone calls, nuclear winter, wayward girls, mutual assured destruction, rampaging moose, the greenhouse effect, cluster headaches, social isolation, Dutch elm disease, the contraction of the universe, paper cuts, eternal damnation, the wrath of God, and paranoia! Thank you all very much. Thank you very much, and good night, y'all.
Yep. Thanks, George, for everything, and stay caffeinated, people.